For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Now, the Home and Garden Show with Wally Conway and Larry O'Neill on News 104.5 WOKV.
Good morning. It is 7:07 on a beautiful Saturday morning in Jacksonville, Florida, the intergalactic headquarters of the Home and Garden Show. To our friends, to our fans, to our families, welcome back to the show. To those of you new to the show, here's who we are and what we do. Each and every Saturday, right here on News 104.5 WOKV, I am joined by the Getty Sasquatch, 6'6", 262 pounds of twisted steel and sex appeal, Mr. Larry O'Neill. You know Larry from his duties on TV as the host of Larry's Garden. You've seen him about town landscaping. He's the tall, tall man in the small straw hat. Me, Wally Conway, Mr. Home Inspection, certified master inspector from Home Pro Inspections. You've seen me on HGTV as the house detective and possibly about town if you spend time in attics and crawl spaces. Larry's job here on the show is to be sure your grass is green, your fruit is sweet, and your flowers forever in bloom. Me, Wally Conway, Mr. Home Inspection, my job is to be sure your home is safe, secure, efficient, and forever a source of pleasure and pride. From time to time, Larry gets a house idea, I get a garden idea, and we mix it up in the middle. But what makes the show fun for us is you. Your thoughts, your calls, your commentary. 340-1045. And if you're calling from Philadelphia, you'll need the area code 904-340-1045. Sasquatch, large man.
What's going on?
Well,
Tiny Tim.
The frost is on the pumpkin there, good
not
buddy.
Not quite. It was 80, well, 80 something.
No. My pumpkins are in a different location than your pumpkins.
Oh, yes, I know.
My pumpkins are sitting here in the shadow of Independence Hall in Philadelphia at
yes.
the Monaco Hotel, one of the Kempstons.
Yes.
42 degrees, man. 42
wow.
degrees. I have looked. I have touched. There is, in fact, frost upon my pumpkins.
Wow.
Yep. So what I wanted to share with you
yes.
is the reminder that as we get cooler, the joy of space heaters. I've been thinking about making
the joy
book.
Of space heaters. Okay.
The joy of space heaters. There's been joy of many other books over time, things over time. And books
yes.
have been New York Times bestsellers. I, in fact, am putting together a coffee table book known as The Joy of Space Heaters.
Oh, I'm sure that's going to be on the top bottom.
Yeah. Well, you know, since
top
since
of the bottom.
Of, since the dawn of time,
yeah, yeah.
as early as the caveman.
I was thinking about bathroom book counter.
No. Since the dawn of time, man has sought to remove frost from his pumpkins.
Yes.
In the space in which he was habitating. And the space heater has done it. So I just thought it would be fascinating
mm-hmm.
to trace the history of space heaters through photography, some in color, black and white, diagrams,
yes.
history of the space heater. So that should be out in time for Christmas.
Oh, good.
So what's exciting
I'll put
for you
it,
this
I'll
week?
Put it, I'll put it on my list of things to read, not to read. No, read. I mean, somewhere along that line. But
well,
anyway.
It's, what's new in your week?
New in my week is, you know, I was thinking of beautiful trees. You know, it is starting to getting in that cold zone of in maybe another 30 or 40 days. And some things that look great in the fall. And there's going to be some trees in our area, of course, in Pennsylvania. They have so many trees that turn beautiful orange, red. How's it looking
oh, yeah.
up there?
It was rainy and overcast
no,
yesterday.
No, that's not good for good tree color. A lot of times
yeah.
people even make trips up to Tennessee to see the leaves turn. They schedule it as part of their vacation time. But
absolutely. Skyline Drive.
Right, right, right. And some of the great trees that will do well here, and I was talking to a client, and he has a Japanese maple. He just, you know, remarks how beautiful it is in fall. Japanese maples do have a beautiful fall color. Even though they're not large, you know, you can get some large ones. Some of the green varieties or the species varieties can get up to around 20 feet. You know, they have a great fall color. And some of them look, you know, some of the weepers, they look good naked, you know what I mean? Kind of like me. But, you know, when they have that cascading structure, so they're a great-looking tree to have in the landscape. Then you have some great crepe myrtles. You know, we have so many crepe myrtles that look good in the fall. Some of the ones that are, you know, have to look at reliability of color. You know, when we have a normal cooling down and drought in the fall, that's the ideal situation. A lot of trees will turn color, but red rocket and pink velour are great crepe myrtles that have that reliable red yellow color, a combination of orange in them in their leaves. So if you're thinking about planting a tree, and this is an ideal time to plant a tree because the temperature's down, you know, you don't have to water as much. It's a great time. And then they root during the winter, and then in spring they have a little bit of time to root, and then they'll put the leaves on. But crepe myrtles are great. You know, of course, you know, crepe myrtles are bulletproof, and pretty much, you know, as far as trees are concerned. So adding one of those to your landscape, and these are smaller trees. The Chinese fringe tree, undoubtedly the most reliable in fall color. It turns a great butter yellow uniform. And one of the great things about the Chinese fringe tree is when it turns that color, it holds its leaves a little longer. Normally in our climate, because it's, you know, warm and then it rains and then we have all kinds of wind issues, that they will, you know, turn color maybe for about a week or 2 weeks, and then boom, the leaves are gone. But this particular one that will hold its leaves for an extended period of time. Then the American fringe tree, of course, that's a great one too. That's turns that nice yellow color in the fall. The difference between the two is, you know, of course, one's from China, one's from America or from Asia, is that I think the Chinese fringe tree is bigger and it's much more vigorous. You know, the American fringe tree, it's a slower growing, not quite as vigorous. And then a maple that does really well in our climate is called October Glory. October Glory is a great, reliable, beautiful red maple in the fall. And when it flushes in the spring, it does have some red overtones in it. And it's a great tree to add to a landscape if you're looking for a larger shade tree. The first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 are smaller, except for the fringe, the Chinese fringe tree. It gets a bit medium size. And then October Glory, of course, is going to be your biggest one. But
let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
You know how with flowering plants, we can do things to cause them to either flower sooner, flower longer, in some cases even impact the color of the flower.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to deciduous trees,
what?
Are there things we can do to accelerate the coloration?
That's a good question.
Or extend it longer.
That's a good question. If you really want to have, you know, want to try to help it have a great fall color, is to do a reduced amount of water. They like a little bit of drought. When they're getting ready to color,
That'll cause it to color sooner.
Yes, the drought, dryness gets a little more color.
Interesting.
Yes. That's an absolute must. A lot of things, you know, you want to consider also this time of the year, for the do-it-yourself or lawn care folks, is that pre-emergent on the lawn. You know, it's going to keep those winter weeds. We've been having unusually warm winters, and there's been a lot of winter growth on these weeds, like hawksbill. There's a dozen, you know, weeds that get out there. A dollar weed, you know, will have some seeds.
Yeah.
It will start to germinate in the early spring. But the pre-emergent right now is a must. Is get that out there. You know, and also, you know, if you're putting down potash on your grass, you know, that will, what potash does is strengthen the root system. It makes it more cold hardy. You know, one thing you may want to consider is to aerate your lawn right now. It's a lot of times people wait till the spring. It's not no problem to aerate your lawn.
Aerate, but not dethatch.
Not dethatch. Good point, Wally. Good point. Not dethatch because the thatch provides some insulation in the for cold. You know, if we have maybe 2 or 3 weeks of 20 degrees maybe lately, but it provides some insulation. But aeration is not a bad idea before you put down the potash. That way you get more uniform distribution in the soil of the potash. It's so much harder when you're trying to get things into the soil uniformly. So and the aeration helps to do that. So maybe want to consider putting that on the list of things, the long list of things to do. Also, when you're storing your lawnmower, you store your gas equipment, you gotta, you could dump out the lawnmower, or you can put the stable in it. That's a chemical that gets.
Yeah, I use that in the boat stuff as well as my yard products.
What product?
And the gas that I'm storing.
What product do you like better?
I use Stabil on the home appliances, and then for the boat, there's things that are specific that have Merck Cruiser engines. Mm-hmm. They're 454 Merck Cruiser inboards. Merck Cruiser has a product line called Quicksilver, so that's specific for marine use, which is a different group of issues.
Yeah.
In home. But I will share with you also, it's not a bad thing to just start the equipment once a month, even though it's cold.
Yes. It seems like when you're using it every day, everything goes good, you store it, and then everything goes wrong, That's one of the things about, storing lawn equipment. It's going great, during the summer, then you put it away, and then fall, so a list of maintenance things.
People forget about putting the stable in the gas that they're storing, not only in the particular piece of equipment, but like in my case, I have about 20 gallons of gasoline I keep in the garage for the generator. And then what happens is when I get the fresh gasoline, I put the stable in there, so I know that that stuff is stabilized.
Right.
And then I consume that gasoline for my yard equipment from what's supposed to be my hurricane supply and replenish. So the gasoline is continual in a consumption and refresh from the back end. Does that make any sense?
Yes. Yeah.
And the stable is already in it. Then the other thing is to run the yard equipment dry.
Absolutely dry.
Get it so you don't have any gasoline in the carburetor.
Right.
So having stabilized gas in the carburetor still isn't really a good idea.
Right,
just run
right.
Dry every time.
Right. Draining it dry is your best solution. Right.
Yep.
Sometimes maybe a little hard to get it started in the beginning, but it's just your best solution for a long life.
Well, it's not hard to start. You're essentially priming the carburetor. So
yeah.
It might take you an extra pull or two, but it's easier to take that extra pull or two than it is to have to clean out or disassemble or rebuild the carburetor.
Or take it in for service for $300. Yeah.
Good point. So a little bit of forethought, a little bit of maintenance, a little bit of preparation makes the world a better place. It's 7:20 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Brief break, jumping right back on your calls at 340-1045. Stay with us. Right back. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show. It is 7:23 on a beautiful Saturday morning in Jacksonville, Florida, and a very frosty morning in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I'm Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections, along with Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden, enjoying the day together, taking your calls at 340-1045. Larry, I have to share with you, I grew up not here in Philadelphia, but right across the Delaware River in the Camden part of the world, and I remember coming to Philadelphia as a young kid, and the water was the worst tasting stuff imaginable. They pumped it out of the Schuylkill River, which at the time was a giant toxic waste dump. I don't know what they did to it at the local water treatment facility, but it was awful tasting. You could smell it, you can taste it. It probably wasn't good for you. I was thinking as soon as I got up here that somehow they've improved it. But what really came to my mind was our friend Mark Kinder over at Affordable Water Jacks. There's no doubt in my mind that no matter what comes out of your faucet, Affordable Water can cause the taste to be right, the smell to be right, the texture to be right, and as or more importantly, that whatever biologic funk or chemical funk is in there, they can solve that for you so that it comes out exactly the way that it's supposed to. You know, the other thing that was coming to my mind as I was thinking about all that goo in the water, not just how good or bad is it for you, there's no scenario where it would be good for you, but it's the interaction of the minerals and chemicals in the water for people who have allergies or sensitivities, or also taking any exotic medley of medicines. We're mixing other chemistry in with the chemistry, the pharmacy that's intended to make us healthy. And it's important. What are we, 97% water, 80% water? We are water.
Water
everywhere. That the water we consume is all the way right and correct. Paulus and Mark and his team of Affordable Water Jacks can solve that. I was thinking, too, about my own home, you know, living on the well. And a lot of us who live on a well think, hey, we're all good with whatever's coming out of the well. But at the same time, it's often going into an aerator or other equipment. It's important that equipment be squeaky clean so that we're not running that good well water through funky equipment. Folks at Affordable Water Jack, that's who cares to my equipment. My air handler is squeaky clean so that what's coming into my house has been, it's as good as nature intended the water to be. So just a reminder, affordablewaterjacks.com. How much impact is there in the difference between waters that you're putting on your lawn? Is there any real impact there?
Well, the only thing is that if you've got iron in your water, it gets a little bit of stain on the grass and on the foliage, but that's a completely different issue. Wally, I was just wondering, you know, since you're up there in Pennsylvania, you can go to someone that's well-known house that has been in Jacksonville. His name's been well known. It's called Bartram, Mr. Bartram. He lives in Pennsylvania. He's in Philadelphia, right out of Philadelphia. He lived on that river there in Philadelphia. Right. And you can, of course, you need an M16 to get through the neighborhood, but it's a beautiful little house there and a historic garden. And remember, they were the ones that introduced the poinsettia to the gardening. You know,
that was Bartram. I thought that poinsettia was the guy.
He gave it to the ambassador to South Carolina. The ambassador of South Carolina gave it to Bartram, and Bartram introduced it into culture in the United States.
So it's kind of teamwork makes the dream work.
Yes.
I'm really a Ben Franklin kind of guy. So my intention is to really kind of do the Ben Franklin Trail, including he's buried at just about two blocks from where I am at, I believe it's Christ Church.
Right.
To pay my respects to the founder of the $100 bill.
The founder of the $100 bill. I like that one.
Isn't that why his picture's on it?
Yes. But the Bartram, the Longwood Gardens is there too, so you can go to Longwood Gardens. There's a
that's in Delaware. That's
It's right across. It's a drive. I stay downtown Pennsylvania, right where you're staying, and then I drove. I mean, it's only 15-20 minute drive.
In the greater metropolitan area.
Yeah, it's in the metropolitan area. There's a bunch of gardens there, and you can also go to the Winnether Garden there in Delaware.
No, I'm not going to Delaware. I'm not doing it.
Okay.
I'm going to walk everywhere.
You want to walk everywhere? Okay.
Yeah, cobblestone streets, people playing the flutes.
Okay.
It's just like in the old days.
Yeah. Are you going to go to Independence Hall?
Yeah, it's right across the street. I can look out the window and see it.
All right. Okay.
Hey, when I was a little kid, we only have a couple of seconds in this. When I was a little kid, the Liberty Bell right now is in this pavilion. It kind of looks like a gas station over on Phillips Highway. You know, it's got thick glass around it. When I was a little kid, we'd make the trip to Independence Hall for class trips, and the Liberty Bell was in the main foyer of Independence Hall. You could knock on it with your knuckles and make it ring and touch it, put your finger in the crack, and the whole deal. I mean, we're really embraced into history, but not so much anymore. Anyway, it's 7:30 here at News 104.5. We've got Fox News, traffic, weather, and more of the Home and Garden Show featuring you at 340-1045. Stay with us. Right back. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show. It is 7:34 here at News 105. I'm Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections, along with Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden, enjoying the day together, taking your calls at 340-1045. I'd be remiss if we didn't welcome those traveling from near and far to today's Florida-Georgia game down at the Veterans Memorial Veterans Memorial. What do we call that darn place now? TIAA Bank Field. Horrible name for a stadium. Horrible name for a stadium, but we're grateful for the money, I suppose. Anyway, reminder to those folks, we are happy to have you. Be safe. And reminder to all of us, use our turn signal, because we have a lot of dazed and confused people walking around town today in anticipation and soon to be in celebration of the football game. So, Florida, Georgia, yahoo, just as happy I'm out of town.
Yes.
Yes. Hey, as we're preparing for the cooler weather, which we really are, both in the garden as well in the home, one of the great things you can do in your home to make your home more comfortable and more efficient, meaning affordable as it cools down, is doing things to stop outside air from penetrating into your home, where it will then need to be heated. So how does air get from the outside into the inside of the home? A little bit of it is a good thing, so we can continue to breathe. Too much is a bad thing. Virtually never are we in a situation in any residence in our area where we have too little air. We're always chasing too much air. So the single biggest culprit, believe it or not, is penetrations in the ceiling. That is air that's moving from the attic into the living space. It's very inexpensive, though sometimes it can be a nuisance, to do what we refer to as seal the attic plane, meaning get up into the attic, and every place there's a penetration, every wire, every pipe, where the ducts come through.
Light fixtures.
Light fixtures. And seal the back end of that so that attic air isn't coming into the home. That's the biggest culprit, though it's also a little bit of a pain in the neck. The next biggest culprit of air infiltration.
But easy to do.
It's easy. It's just a pain in the neck because you're crawling through the attic.
Right.
The next biggest culprit, which is easier to do, is the weather strip around the doors. If you you can do a real easy test at the nighttime, turn a light on in the inside foyer by any door going to the outside. Go outside and look around the edges. If you can see light from any angle, that is in fact a pathway for lots and lots of air to penetrate from the inside of the outside of the house into the inside, and your inside warm air get outside. It's a transfer of air. And here's what people don't realize. If air comes in one slot, so let's make believe a cubic foot, which is about a basketball of air, gets inside your house, it's pushing one out the other end. So each time a cold basketball of air comes in, a nice warm one goes out another direction. So we want to work on those doors. Another place to look that's very, very easy is around the windows. We want to be sure those are nicely sealed, both the frame to the sidewall and where the moving parts of the windows are also. We want to make sure those are filled with backer rod is an easy example. It looks like styrofoam string. You can put right in that little crack, and it'll stop the air, yet when you want to open the windows later, you just pull it out and off you go. One last place that people don't often think of is the electric outlets. For very small money, you can virtually...
Okay.
Yep. Well, that's a 2-inch by 4-inch or 2-inch by 5-inch hole in the wall. And most houses have between 15 and 40 of them.
That's a lot.
And you can buy gaskets in any hardware store. So they're little foam gaskets. You take off the surface plate, and the gasket is in the same shape of the plate. You put it in there, you press it up, and it seals it. And one additional thing you can do at the outlets, do you know those little plug-in things that are like supposed to be child safe caps?
Yes.
You can stick those in the unused outlets, and you've sealed yet another hole. And this is a very easy way for truly pennies to increase the comfort in the home and decrease the expense to heat and cool the home. You'll also, when you're managing air infiltration, you're managing dirt, dust, and allergens that come into your home. You're stopping them from coming in. So it's really a win all the way around, just to make it more comfortable, more breathable, and less dust. Kind of an easy thing to do.
Well, yeah. I mean, what do you figure that you would be overall savings, let's say a 2,000 square foot house? If you got never done it before and you decide to do it, what would you save annually?
Well, let's consider that 40% of your electric bill is heating and cooling.
Right.
And depending on the age of the house, so a house built, you know, in 2015, they're naturally tighter than a house built like yours. What was yours built, 29?
Yeah, 29. Mm-hmm.
1929. So yours leaks like a sieve.
It does.
By comparison.
It does.
So, you know, it's about where am I? Where are you starting from? So the answer to your question would be between 5 and 20% of your heating and cooling bill. So conservatively, about 10% of your monthly electric
That's
bill.
That's pretty good size savings there.
Yeah,
well, annually. You know,
it's chasing those nickel-dimey things is how I got my bill from $250 a month, which is what it had been prior to me moving in, to consistently under $100 a month. And again, November here is another one of these shoulder seasons. I'll probably have a total electric bill of about $65. And it wasn't any one thing that was, you know, we did this one thing and it made this $200 a month reduction. That's just not the case. It's chasing dimes of electric spend with pennies. That's the ticket. How do I simply and cost effectively recoup that money? And when you consider I've been in that house for 10 years and my annual electric bill is about $2,000 a year less than the person that had the home before me. My average is under $800 a year in electric. So mine's about $2,000 less. You multiply that by the 10 years, that's $20,000.
Wow.
That's what I call a
boatload
of money.
Yeah, boatload of money. Pay for that gas on your outboard motors.
It paid for the whole boat. Quite
yes,
frankly.
Of course.
Yeah.
Go ahead. In the garden, you know, the deer are going to start invading the landscapes because you know our deer are very hungry for landscapes around here. And I was just trying to do a landscape where they've got a lot of deer prevalence. A lot of deer out there munching on everything. And it can be frustrating. And, you know, some of the plants that we've used over the years that are deer resistant is going to be, and very easy to get a hold of, is a society garlic. Of course, that, you know, deer do not like society garlic. And if you have
Does it repel the deer?
It actually, they're long ways away from that. The deer will actually, you put the society garlic in the front and you have roses behind it, they won't even attempt to go there because the smell of the society garlic is...
So it's really a repellent.
More of a repellent.
Yeah,
then,
nice.
Then you have the Ilex shillings, which are Ilex vomitoria, is a deer-resistant plant. And the deer, you know, don't browse at it all. And boxwoods is another plant, and that's very easy to take care of, and it creates those evergreen heads. Indian hawthorn, you know, is what deer love. If you plant Indian hawthorn, they're going to be all over that.
That's catnip for the deer.
Oh, they love it. They love it. Some of the, even though they say that, you know, that agapanthus are resistant, you know, they're the deer, or they don't really like it. Agapanthus, which is a common plant that you could buy in our area, is the deer love that too. Ligustrum, you know, of course, ligustrum, you know, not my favorite plant, but if you got a deer problem, it will create that evergreen hedge, and the deer do not like ligustrum. Tropicals, so the deer don't like crotons at all. So there's a great.
What does that look like? I don't know that plant.
It's that blue flower, the blue flower. It has like a kind of a rambling look, and it's a great looking plant. Gets a little cold damage in the winter, but again, deer resistant. Then in the a lot of the annual flowers that we plant are a problem for with deer, but Coreopsis is a great one. You can plant, it's deer resistant, and also petunias are deer resistant for your annual planting, and you can plant them now. They may show some damage around from cold, maybe late January, because you know our winters are not getting warmer and warmer. But
let me ask you a question. Just this week, my citrus, in fact, it's my dwarf orange, the one that Linda got for me a half a dozen years ago.
Yeah, yes, yeah.
The low-hanging fruit, I had two pieces of fruit partially eaten. I know they're not ready to pick, I believe it's either possum or raccoon got it.
The possum. The deer do not like citrus. They will not browse citrus. So that's another fruit tree you could plant if you got a deer.
Aside from trimming the low-hanging branches, which now have a lot of fruit on them, I thought about trying to rope them up a little bit to get them just a little bit higher.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That's a good idea.
Is there any other...
But, you know, possums are great climbers. They can climb up there and grab one, but they're a little on the lazy side.
Well, they're on the lazy side, and especially the dwarf citrus, all of my citrus, I don't have any that are over 8 feet, 10 feet. They're twiggy might be the right answer.
Yes.
It's not a pleasant climb for a big possum.
Yeah.
Any other ideas on repelling them?
The only other thing you could put out there is, you know, human hair. Those are some of the things you could do. You know, that you could buy this.
That could whiz around the perimeter.
Yes, that works. That's always worked. It's been working since again a time. There's a product called Skid that is made in I think it was developed in Norway
because they got. Skid
mill so organite.
Skid marks around it. Is that what you're telling me?
It's a liquid spray. You can put mill organite works also too, and mill organite actually is they're retesting and relabeling that as a deer repellent.
So
deer repellent.
And that would work for possum also.
Yeah, probably. I'd give it a shot. You know, why not?
Yeah,
you know,
it's cheap.
It's easy, and plus it's a great fertilizer. So, you know, there's some things you could do to repel the deer.
I use mellorganite in edibles?
Yes, absolutely. You know, there's been something about heavy metal in them, but I looked at the percentages. It's so low. It's not even measurable. You know, really, when it makes that, and you mix it in with the soil, and it gets less and less and less and less and less.
Well, I'm doing all these things not to put crud in my system, and I don't want to end up with.
Yeah, you're growing your own food, then you put your redo yourself, and we get all that other stuff in there with your fertilizer. No, you don't want to do that. Absolutely not. So, Wally, what is your first thing you're doing today in Pennsylvania?
First thing we're going to do is go have breakfast. Tanya's got a breakfast place picked out. I haven't even seen it yet. As you know, all that noise you heard in the background, that was actually her taking a shower.
Okay.
That's kind of creepy, isn't it?
A little bit.
You were there live. And then we're going over to Independence Hall. There's a place called Constitution Hall, Constitution something or other. So anyway, we're just doing the revolutionary tour, I guess you might say, though.
The revolutionary tour. I did that with my boys. It's a great trip.
I like it. It's 7:50 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Brief break, jumping right back to you at 340-1045. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show, 7:55 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Larry and I, grateful that you were with us, as always. Need Larry during the week. Easy to find all the time online. Larry'sGarden.com. Me, Wally Conway, easy to find online. GoHomePro.com. Joining us from the glorious city of St. John's is Cynthia to share some thoughts on her citrus. Welcome to the Home and Garden Show, Cynthia.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Wonderful, thank you.
One of the things I wanted to say when you were talking earlier about chunks out of your citrus, we had trouble with nutria. I don't know if you live on any water, but the nutria will just eat half of it out of the citrus and then just leave the rest hanging on the tree.
I don't think we've ever had a complaint about nutria, but they are here. They are here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I live on the water, too, though. It's at Admiral's Inlet behind my house.
But
that could be. I've never seen one, though.
I have. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They look like a huge rat.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
That would stick in my mind.
Yeah, scary. But the question I had is, we have about 11 citrus trees, and this year they did great when it was raining and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, then all of a sudden, one of our trees, it is a pineapple orange, it dropped all of its citrus, and they're yellow underneath, and the rest of them, they still have the citrus on it. Most of them dropped. Why would it do that?
I would look very carefully to see, do you have any brown spots on the citrus?
No. No, the leaves look great.
Could just turn, I'm talking on the actual fruit.
Oh, no, they just turned yellow and dropped.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be some type of disease on there, fungus. If you could send me a shot, a picture of the citrus, I'll look at it and see if I can tell, you know, what can cause them to drop their fruit is getting too much water. Is it in a low area? You know...
No, but we did have a lot of rain where the root beds sat in the water.
Yes, that will definitely cause them to drop their fruit.
Okay, so we need to figure out a form of drainage.
Right. You know, they're like a gardenia. Too much water, the leaves turn yellow. Not enough, the leaves turn yellow. It's always an indication you're not with their uniformly yellow. No brown spots, no tanning underneath the fruit. But standing in water, that they're not going to like that.
Okay. They are, so that's what it is. Then.
Right.
We did
poor
have a lot
drainage.
Of for a period of time.
Right. And if it stands
in. Went to none at all.
Yeah, it's extremes in the state of Florida.
Is the tree small enough you can transplant it to a better location?
No, we have all our trees in a row. Two sets of rows. The optimum sunlight is there. That's why.
Got it.
Yeah. Well, I would look at maybe a lot of times where there's standing water, there's a little berm or sod or something that's not allowing the water to move out. So look at how
between there we could put like a French drain. Or
yes,
something
yes, yes. Just any kind of drainage, dig a swale, look to the low spot, and that's a problem. Try to solve the problem just by grading
okay.
it. And that should solve the problem next year. All right?
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Great call.
Good luck with it, Cindy. Yeah, and if you had a French drain near your orange tree, orange juice would come out the discharge end.
Yes, exactly. I was thinking about that. But one of the things you want to avoid doing this time of the year, I know people out there cooling down, they want to get out in the yard, but you don't want to do any hard cutback right now. Because even though plants are cold resistant, like viburnum or boxwood, as soon as it cools down, all that new growth is going to get damaged, and you're going to be in trouble in the spring.
104.5, Larry and I are grateful that you're with us. Go Gators, and use your turn signal. Talk to you next week.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise. Having fun in the sun or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.